Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball, GAA.
I don't want to make excuses. We had three games in 14 days. That certainly takes it out of teams. Like, I heard Jack O'Connor talking about it yesterday, and that's Kerry and the depth of their squad.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off The Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
We're with buddies here today. To my right, we have a World Cup edition of the show, actually. This is Jan and Collar. Mm-mm. And a call. And then I have a Brazilian duo over here, Keiterson.
Oh, wow.
And Matthew Brenielsen.
Brenielsen's the best one. Like, that is
good morning, inarguable. All. Good morning. Are we excited to be here after the World Cup arriving? No?
Yes? Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It was a great night of football last night, yeah. I think I actually went a bit of a rogue way around it last night. One of the few times I've actually managed to see a good bit of football with the timings that it's been kicking off at. Obviously watched the England game, then decided, right, tactical, going to go to sleep here for a few hours. Took the 2 hours, got back up, watched Belgium-Senegal in its entirety. But I'm kind of paying for it now because I was up until, whatever, 12:30 last night watching that.
If we work backwards, actually, last night, so USA 2, Bosnia and Herzegovina 0. America went down to 10 men in this game, actually, between their two goals. But they're through to the last 16. And then before that, Matt, you spoke about it there. Senegal 2-0 up against Belgium, cruising. This is the end of the golden generation. The dregs of it was gone, yeah. Dutched. Belgium won 3-2 with a deep, deep stoppage time of extra time penalty by Youri Tielemans. What a penalty.
Yeah.
That's how you want your centre midfielder to hit a penalty.
Goals. And then to kick it all off yesterday, of course, it looked very exciting for a lot of people. For a large portion of this game, it finished England 2, DR Congo 1. The 7th minute, DR Congo cut the lead. It wasn't until the 75th that England equalised. They didn't have a penalty in the first half, Keith. Should they have?
No, I didn't think it was a penalty. I was doing the commentary on the game last night, and I thought when Kane rounded the goalkeeper, both of his legs go bolt upright and he sort of creates that contact himself. And there is a little bit of contact, but like I say, I think Kane hits the brakes and wants that contact. So I just thought it was really funny when the referee was running behind Harry Kane doing that diving gesture, as if to say, no, you dived. But then I was thinking, why aren't you booking him? Because it's either a penalty or he's dived. And I think the referee made up his mind that he did dive. But I do think that if the referee had given a penalty, I don't think VAR would have overturned it. The fact that the ref didn't give a penalty, I think VAR said we're happy enough to stick with that also. But yeah, I thought it was a dive, to be honest.
The two camera angles show me something different. From the referee's perspective, his side of the ball looked like a dive. But then from behind the goalkeeper, I thought he clipped him.
He dived before the goalkeeper clipped him. I think that's probably the key point. He dived and then the goalkeeper clipped him.
It's just his running mechanics for me. Like, he's running in full pelt, and all of a sudden his two legs just go straight, as if you know when a winger goes past the right back and he swings the right leg out to sort of create that contact and almost kick the right back and go, oh, look, there's contact there, I've been hit. I just wasn't having it for me. And yeah, I didn't think it was a penalty, but what an unbelievable turnaround from Harry Kane. But I think in these tournaments, you've got so much magic. Look, Messi has an unlimited amount of magic, as do, you know, Mbappe, a couple of others. I think this English team already are starting to use up the limited magic they have in that team.
Because you say unbelievable turnaround from Harry Kane, and that's probably an accurate way to word it. Yeah. Not necessarily the team.
Yeah.
Now, the substitutions worked, because for the England equaliser, I think the four or five players who touched the ball before Kane scores the header, they're all brought on the pitch. So he does correct his mistakes.
I think Anthony Gordon got both assists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did really well for the winner. Yeah. You know, the goal itself is individual brilliance, but the pass from Gordon is like the normal thing to do there. It's just spray it wide, but he kind of eliminates about three or four players.
The thing with like England's availability, like the players that they have to their disposal, you look at that team last night and it was like it suddenly looked quite limited.
Well, I think they've looked quite limited the whole of the World Cup.
They've had one really good half, second half against Croatia, particularly the start of it.
But that's what I mean, the Ghana game, and I listened to Thomas Tuchel in the build-up to the game last night, and he basically said, I think they're going to match Ghana up. They play a 4-5-1 with Wiese just on the periphery up front. And I thought they struggled. And I think if you're a lower team, now I don't think Mexico will consider themselves a lower team. I think they'll have a right go off of England, but if you're the so-called lower nation and you're playing against the English, you've just seen a blueprint of what they really don't like to do. And if I was an England fan or an England player, I'd be fearful, because when the Mexicans beat Ecuador, they had a camera speaking to the fans coming out of the Azteca, and they're up for that English game. It wasn't, the English are really good. It was, bring them here, this is our home, we'll beat them.
What did Tuchel allude to? It has to be attitude versus altitude, because they have no time to adapt here. So this is massively high up in the air.
The Azteca, yeah. 60
what is it, a Kilpatrick and a bit?
So I actually have a list of some of the highest mountain ranges across Europe here. So the Azteca is 2,200 meters, 2,200 meters above sea level. Mm-hmm. That's how high it up it is. So just for context of that, Carntuil, the highest mountain range in Ireland, is 1,039 meters above sea level. So you would have to have Carntuil on top of Carntuil, and then build a football stadium on top of that, on top of a 200-meter building. So that's how high up they're playing. Ben Nevis is the highest mountain range in the UK, 1,345 meters. So again, add another 1,000 meters onto that and then build a football stadium on top of it. And that's what you have here. So you have to almost get to the 30th. The Azteca is built essentially the 25th highest range in Europe is where this football stadium is.
In a graphic, that's where it would show up with all the mountains.
Yeah.
It's not just high though, it's formidable.
Yeah.
A record.
Some stats actually Ben Syme sent this to me yesterday, so I won't take total credit for them, but they've played 89 competitive matches at the Azteca. They've won 70 of them. They've only lost twice. Unbeaten in 10 games at the World Cup. So they played 10 games in the Aztec at the World Cup and they haven't lost. They've only conceded two goals and both of them were in 1986 and they didn't lose either of them games. So, yeah, it's going to be a stiff task for them. As well as that, to add to the altitude thing, is England have played all their games so far, I think, if not all, majority of, in the air-conditioned type stadiums where the roof is closed and it's like 20 degrees inside, even though outside it might be 30. So whatever about the temperature, which I'm sure will be pretty high too, and the heart of Mexico, the altitude is going to be difficult for them to deal with. And Mexico haven't conceded a goal at this tournament yet. So, look, they fancy their chances. But I don't know, I don't like the fact that everyone is going, Mexico could beat England here. Usually it's like, you know, the DRCs of the world who everyone had sort of written off. And I think they caught England cold a little bit yesterday, in that England anticipated the Ghana approach of, we're just going to sit back and do nothing here.
The
DRC didn't really do that.
Yeah.
They came out a little bit, they could play ball. I think that caught England early. And I know it's the biggest cliche in the history of football, but they might have just scored maybe 20 minutes too early.
They hit the post though, later in the half.
Obviously, it's a sitter, yeah.
I mean, like pound for pound, like England, they probably shaded it, they probably had more chances if you looked at it totally objectively. Like we look at it from a point of view of England where, we look at it from a point of view of England, like once again failed to show up. But they probably did have just enough chances. Anthony Barry at half time, right, alluded to that early goal, saying like they might have been in a bit of shock from it.
Yeah.
I think in every other country, the assistant manager of the team is doing halftime interviews. It's just become his thing, like.
Yeah, but I don't think the manager wants to do it. I think it's as black and white as that. I'm not doing it, so you do it. It just rolls downhill, doesn't it?
It's surprisingly honest, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Even the Croatia game, I thought he was extremely honest, because I was of that easy-ozy opinion that drawing with Croatia at half-time in the opening game of the World Cup is not a bad opening 45 minutes. Anthony Barry's opinion was totally different to mine And I think that was a little insight into what the dressing room were in store for. And when you see the reaction of England in the second 45 minutes against Croatia, the way they, I think the term he used was full gas, it was brilliant. But you're looking at them against DR Congo, against Panama, against Ghana. Right back is a massive issue. Spence last night going backwards defending was awful. I thought Pickford should have saved Sapenga's goal. O'Reilly at left back is a brilliant footballer, but again, going backwards, I'm not sure how well he would deal with the likes of, you know, Mbappe, Barcola, Doué's of this world. So I still think there's more question marks than actual answers over this English team, and they've played four games now and that's three on the bounce. I've been pretty uninspired with them, although they've got the job done. The level they've played against in terms of Ghana, Panama and Congo, they should be wiping the floor with these teams, and yet they're scraping through.
So what's going to change versus Mexico?
I think they get B.
I think
I'm not sure what they will change. Maybe Reece James's fit, he goes into right back. I thought Declan Rice did okay at right back when he played there for the last 15 minutes last night.
They brought Eze on, didn't they?
Declan Rice out to right back. I'm not, like, if Gareth Southgate played Elliot Anderson and Declan Rice as two holding midfielders against Congo, he'd be milked out of it in the press, because they're playing with the handbrake on. Do they really need two sixes against the Congo? They're going to have an awful lot of the ball. You're not getting number 10 in there and tell Declan Rice that you can do the whole thing. We don't need two, is there? Or are you absolutely petrified of the counter-attack?
I thought they were really open when they lost the ball.
Yeah.
Whatever about your two sixes. Like, if you get rid of one of your sixes, they're even more open, aren't they?
Yeah, but I think that's because Nico O'Reilly is allowed to go forward as much as he likes. Jed Spence is allowed to go forward as much as he likes. So somebody has got to put the brakes on and think, we can't all go.
I asked you this from the ex-pro perspective. I was looking at Nori Madueke. I was like, this guy is repeatedly not tracking back. But by his body language, could you tell, is it instruction or is he actually negating his duties?
I think he's negating his duties. When you see Sapenga's goal, I highlighted it last night, Jed Spence gets attracted to one of the, I think it's not Johan Wiese, it's one of the Congo midfielders, make a run beyond, and Jed Spence goes and tracks that run, but the ball comes beyond him and Sapenga's left in an ocean of space on the edge of the box, and he scores at the near post. But when you see the full pitch view, Madueke is about 30 yards away with his hands on his hips just watching it unfold. And look, I've been in teams where managers have said to me, Keith, don't be afraid to cheat to a certain degree. But I've also had left backs berate me and make me do that job. And when Jed Spence gets pulled into the middle of the pitch, Madueke must be looking, thinking, he's in an ocean of space. But he doesn't try a leg to run. And when you go in on a Monday morning and the manager sees stuff like that, you generally get hung out to dry. But if he'd start sprinting and thought, I seen it develop in late gaffer, but I tried my best to correct it, maybe you get away with it. But he just stood there developing, going, not my problem. And for me, Madueke is not good enough to only do one side of football.
Yeah,
he's not
thing,
in that bracket.
That's the thing with Madueke, for sure. I think that's why people get real angry. It was like, he has no right to be walking
here.
Like,
brilliant going foot. Can you imagine if he was a half-decent defender and added that, like, with his attacking style?
Well, like, it's curious about Saka, isn't it? Bukayo Saka.
Ah, yeah.
What's going on, like? Because this guy was, like, he played for England all the time. They run him into the ground, like.
He doesn't look fit.
Yeah, he doesn't look fully fit. And I'd say probably saving him
for
the latter, for maybe the next round.
I mean, this game will wreck him, won't it?
I don't know. Did you catch the Mike's picking up Thomas Tuchel a couple of times in this game and in previous games as well? He is tearing Jed Spence apart in these games. There was one stage where he played the
Congo
ball.
Congo were tearing him apart as well. He was
played
up to
the
nothing,
ball forward, and it's just like roaring the house down at Jed Spence. He seems to be happy enough with him for some reason. I don't know. He got burned for the goal. Is, you know, per positioning for that. Definitely the right back, right wing, as you mentioned, Madueke not coming back is not helping matters either. But look, he left the Real Madrid right back at home and he took the Tottenham, like, second choice right back with him. So, I mean, are these not the consequences of his own actions here for Tuchel?
The funny thing is, I wouldn't be the biggest fan of Trent as a defender. I think if you're, I understand why Thomas hasn't picked him in terms of his defensive capabilities, but Jed Spence is not a good defender. He's okay going forward, but I would class him as quite poor going backwards. And if you're Trent looking at that thinking, I can affect the game going forward, I'm just as poor as he is going backwards. When he says he's picking the best team rather than the best individuals, that leads me to the belief that the Palmers and the Trent Alexander-Arnolds of this world, leads me to believe that maybe they're a little bit abrasive if they're not playing, and, you know, can sting.
Well, maybe he wants control. Is he wants lads that are going to play for
him. Yeah, I think so. But like, people, I've seen this from two sides. People have said to me, "Oh, this is brilliant. Thomas Tuchel is, you know, putting his stamp on this English team. He's picking the best team rather than the best individuals." Is his job not to manage the best individuals? Even if they're a little bit hard to manage, is it not his job to get the best out of Cole Palmer and get him on side, even if he's only going to play half an hour in one of the games? Your job is to make him feel important. Mm. Your job is to get the best out of him, not just go, "I tell you what, I won't pick him."
But these lads, like Diarra Congo, played with absolutely no fear in that first quarter, if you want to call it that. Like, and it didn't have a touch in the opposition box, didn't have a shot at all. Simpenga, right? Brian Simpenga, he were talking about there, Matthew, destroying Spence over and over again. I was looking him up, right? Yeah, like, do I know this guy?
He's a bit mad, yeah.
Like, he's 28, plays for Almeria.
So,
special.
So, he missed their. So, he wasn't. I'll just slip my mind who he was with, but the club he was with in the second division in Spain were playing in the playoffs to get promoted to La Liga.
Castellón.
Yeah, and he skipped that to go and play at the World Cup, but like 2 days ago, his contract obviously expired.
He signed for them.
And he signed for Almeria.
Which is probably, in the list of his clubs, the biggest club he's played for is Almeria. And this guy shows up and he is destroying this English side, destroying them. Because to your point, Keith, it was like Madueke doesn't have the right not to track back because he's on the ball. He's not that special. He's fine. Jed Spence is like, you put him in for his defensive capabilities. He's not that great of a defender.
Mm.
That's the right side.
Yeah, but surely Thomas Tuchel says that. Like, Jed Spence is not the number one right back for England when everybody is fit. So he's coming in as, not makeshift, but, you know, he's going to need a hand. Surely you're telling Madueke, give him a hand. Mm. What Congo have, when they win it, they're going to get the ball to Sepenga. They're going to get it out wide. Visser will spin into that channel. You're going to have to help out here, Nonny. You can't just decide, "I'll only play when we have the ball." But look, a lot of people were brushing this one off when Mexico won. I could hear the English public saying, "Oh, Mexico is next. It's going to be a great game." I think the Congo took real offence to that. Well, you're looking past us. We're going to give you a right game. And they got a bit of a scare, as they did in the other two games. So I think the English have been extremely underwhelming. It's hard to get behind them.
Lionel Mpassi had a great great game in the DR Congo goal. In fairness to him, so they were obviously after the first hygiene break, England got their act together a bit. I love the way the DR Congo played.
What about the save with his genitals? What about that one?
Oh, that right, yeah.
The first
half.
I've ever heard you.
Oh my god!
Imagine that sentence half an hour ago.
Yeah.
Go under.
Hello, it's Owen Chahan here from Off the Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves in questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
No, you mentioned hydration breaks there, and I think it was a distinct difference in England after both hydration breaks.
I was going to say, hydration break helped England.
Yeah,
that was massively. The common thing on X was like, "I hate these breaks,
I'll give you a few quotes here. John Cross in the Mirror, obviously got these from Infantino after the England game. Obviously, the talk around the hydration breaks has been that, you know, you go in, you get your water on board, you have your 2-3 minutes and you come back out. And the idea is not to make it four quarters, even though that's exactly what's been happening. And we see all the television broadcasters using that time to throw in a few advertisements and all that sort of stuff. And that obviously benefits FIFA too. But he said, after an intense start to both halves, England used their hydration breaks well to regroup, reorganise and get on the front foot before finding the net twice in the final 15 minutes. These breaks are so important to give players a break during tournament play, while also allowing all coaches a dedicated moment in every match, not just depending on the weather conditions, to engage directly with their players. Overall, this was another fantastic FIFA World Cup contest involving two great teams in a fantastic venue in Atlanta. So he is all but admitting and confirming the fact that we're now playing in quarters as opposed to halves. Oh,
yeah. But here's the thing. We've known that,
but I think it's significant that he is now not kind of trying to hide that fact.
He has no mandate to change this.
But he has done.
No, it doesn't.
But he has done.
Oh, he has done, yeah. But this is the thing. He's talking as if he has the right to change the game of football in this manner. He doesn't.
Mm.
This is something that needs to be this is something that needs to be to go through the proper.
Did they not anticipate that it was just going to be roasting, and so they put it in for everyone? Was that not it?
Well,
like the Club World Cup last year, didn't they run into those problems?
I can understand that logic, but the fact that England are playing in an air-conditioned stadium.
Yes, yeah, but then they have to do it for everyone, don't they?
Do they? Why?
I'd say they do, because then how'd you write that rule down? You'd have to set the temperature.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to be like, subjectivity. Okay, then you start the game, and the game starts, as pedantic as this may sound, the game starts at 25 degrees, and then by the 18th minute, it's 30 degrees or whatever, and you're like, well, you have to put it up now.
That's not how it works, though. Like, 5-degree jump in 20 minutes, is that ever happened?
Climate change, mate. You okay. A denier, yeah?
Daily Mount on Friday.
Daily Mount hydration break.
Hydration break.
What?
Unbelievable.
What?
Couldn't get my head around. We had a hydration break.
Yeah, because it was because we have a heat wave.
Yeah, but
it was hot, actually.
I think the first half, I think I was speaking to Pat Fenlon, and he said that the referee notified them just before kickoff that if it gets to 26 degrees they're going to have a hydration break, which is no problem, but they didn't let anybody in the stands know. We were a bit baffled by it. The common sense approach to me has just gone out the window. The second half, and I'm not trying to say this to be funny, I was thinking about putting my jacket on. It became a little bit overcast, there was a bit of a wind, and we've another hydration break. I couldn't believe it. Now the rest of the League of Ireland didn't get a hydration break. So is that bringing the league into disrepute, or is it just, well, it wasn't that hot in the rest of the game, so there's the common sense approach?
No, I think it's a special circumstances in Ireland, isn't it? Because we're just not used to that temperature. So it's like, we're going to have to do something here to help out.
Yeah,
it's been done in previous tournaments. This isn't unprecedented. It's just, I don't think it's ever been done wholesale.
And I don't recall at other tournaments it being used to show ads either.
So yeah, well, they just looked at the opportunity, didn't they?
But
the thing about it is, right, I don't mind them.
No, I don't like
I don't mind them that much, right?
I
talk, Keith, right? Playing football myself, even, I was like, 45 minutes the last time, a half. So when you ask the ref, how long's left there? And it's always like, 18, Blair. 18 minutes. It's like, fucking hell. Well, you know, it's like, getting football and hurling, 35 aside, nice time. Even rugby 40, you said, I was 45 minutes long all time.
Yeah, but you know, like, when the English are struggling against the Congo last night in the midway point of the second half, and they go and Thomas Tuchel says one or two things, has a little tactical switch, gives them a bit of an earful, and in the 75th minute Harry Kane equalises and he scored in the 82nd. If that hydration break doesn't happen, do the Congo stand a better chance of winning? What I hate about modern day football is there's no problem solvers. There's no player on that pitch. Like, look at Elliot Anderson is going to go for 130 million to Manchester City. Mm. Yeah, he can't solve problems against the Congo on the fly.
What's solving problems look like?
Having a look at what's going on around them. What's going wrong?
Did they not have a problem solver on the pitch? That's why they won.
I don't think so. I think they just have the unbelievable talent of Harry Kane.
What's the difference between unbelievable talent and problem solving? Like, he looked at what was wrong and he fixed it. No,
Harry Kane didn't look at what was wrong. He got some opportunities and he hit the back of the net with what opportunities he had. But I'm talking about problem solvers. Penga up against Spence. That was a problem all night, yet the English just kept 1v1, 1v1. Where was Nani Madueke? Where was the 2v1? The stuff in the middle getting overrun in the middle of the park. Anderson and Rice going and getting on the edge of the Congo box, couldn't recover. Just play 10 yards deeper. Or one of you play 10 yards deeper. Just being able to see these things. I just don't like the fact that when things are going against you, there's nobody that stands up and puffs their chest out and thinks, I'll sort this out for us. They all look at the manager and think, what do we do now, gaffer? Or there's only 5 minutes till a hydration break. We'll limp towards that and we'll see where we go from there. I would have been more impressed with the English if they'd have turned the tide last night off their own backs. They didn't need Thomas Tuchel to, you know, show them where exactly they needed to be and put plasters everywhere for them.
But your Congo looked like they were playing with the shackles off, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
In that first 25 minutes.
I wouldn't say they viewed it as a free hit, but they thought, look, if we're going to go out to the English, so be it, but let's have a right pop off them.
Why did England play so freely in the second half against Croatia, do you think?
I look at Croatia, and that's an aging Croatian team, so I do have question marks over them, although I wouldn't be surprised if they were to beat Portugal at midnight tonight. But why did they do that? I just think they've got better players than Croatia. I think on paper, that's the type of stuff they should be doing, but I think when teams play a low block against England, that's when they struggle. And then you're getting Palmer, you're getting Morgan Gibbs-White, all these lads are coming back into the conversation. But make no mistake about it, England have enough talent in the middle of the park to be opening up midfields. But for one reason or another, they're not doing it. And I still don't know who's the number one left winger for England. Is it Gordon? Is it Rashford? I mean, Gordon had a decent night last night. Rashford was in and out. Oh, throughout the tournament, it's been Rashford, then it's been Gordon. It's probably back to Gordon now. And on the right, it looks like Saka, but he doesn't look fit enough.
Yeah. All right, before I move on, anyone say England going through?
Not in my mind.
It wouldn't be surprising if they go through. They have better players than Mexico. Not to sit on the fence. Like, they should be going into that game and winning it, but I don't think they will, no.
I can see him turning them over. I can see England doing a job at them.
Yeah, I could too. I could equally see that, but I think
they might. I can see them beating
them 4-0. 4-0?
I can see them on the counter. I can see it. I can. Many people had an opinion about Danny Murphy, right? They would have thought, a good player for a brief time in his career, the destroyer of Manchester United. Decent footballer. Would have played during your time. Then he became a commentator and a pundit. And I think a lot of people are like, yeah, he's fine. He's all right.
I think everyone was a bit indifferent to him.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. But it's a bit different now.
Yeah, he told this bizarre story on comms for BBC. And now we have video.
Amazing.
It makes it 10 times better.
You used to have a cat called Bob. The game's not that bad.
Yeah, he jumped in the back of a Royal Mail van and we lost him.
We have a double substitution for Norway.
Sad, number really. Anyway.
See, it's a great call by the BBC to release the footage.
Yeah.
Because I heard that live on commentary. I thought it was the commentator that was laughing and that Danny Murphy really was sad.
Mm.
Sad, really.
It's great.
Her Bob has to be sad.
Well,
never to be seen again.
How does that happen?
It's going to change.
How does he end up in the back of a Royal Mail?
Cats are like that, though, aren't they?
Let us know.
Go
9180180. How did that happen? Yeah, Dara Smith-Nathan suggesting only a theory of his, of course, not confirmed that the van driver actually stole the cat. More on that though.
Don't know if you can steal a cat, because cats generally will swap their owners as they see fit.
The best thing about it now is like people are anticipating that commentary team again.
Yeah.
You know? This is the making of Danny Murphy. This is the new part of Danny Murphy.
It 100% is. People are going to see him in a different light now.
Yeah. Another English name of note in Ross Kemp.
Yeah, so Ross Kemp, this was a video that he uploaded last night after, I think. This was after Harry Kane's first goal.
Mm.
So before the winner.
Yes! 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 Harry Kane! Harry Kane! That's what we're talking about! Great changes! Made a massive difference! Opened them up! Come on, England! Come on, England! Close it down! Close it down! 4 minutes! 4 minutes! Plus extra time! My God, why do you do this to me?
I love his seamless transition from absolute joy to be like, now close it down, lads. Calm down. He's screaming down the camera. He's like, calm down. Everyone, tighten it up. We can do this. Most English reaction you're ever going to see to a goal, though, at the same time.
I just look at him from extras, Keith, you know?
I love it.
Before we get on to the Belgium game from last night, we decked McBennett in the studio yesterday, and
so the head of sport for RT was in with Owen Shane covering a wide range of topics. You can get this podcast on the Off the Ball channels and across our digital channels as well, but spoke about the League of Ireland being on TV or not being on TV and how they make those decisions. Spoke a little bit about the upcoming Israel game. We'll bring you that clip in 1 second. But we want to start with a story that we covered on Off the Ball AM or Off the Ball Breakfast yesterday.
Oh.
That's a Freudian slip there.
Oh.
It's going so well.
Casting my mind back to my original days. Off the Ball Breakfast yesterday, where we were talking about potential for Katie Taylor's fight to be on terrestrial TV. And Owen asked Declan McBennett, is this going to happen?
We're certainly thinking about it, and we've had initial discussions, and the truth is they are likely to continue for a period of time. Let's look at it. Katie Taylor is, if not the greatest sports person, certainly one of the greatest sports person people that this island has ever known, and will stand forever in the pantheon of greats. What she has done for her sport, what she has done for young girls, what she has done for sport in general has been amazing. Why would we not want to be involved? However, we were there at the start of the journey. There is amazing footage that was captured by one of our presenters, Paul O'Flynn, when he was operating as a VJ in terms of Paddy Barnes and Katie Taylor back in, I think it was 2011, before the London Olympics, whereby Paddy Barnes and Katie Taylor are sparring and taking lumps out of each other. And it's stunning footage when you see it. We were there at the beginning of the Katie journey. We certainly want to be there at the end of the Katie journey. We want to reflect that. So will others. So will other broadcasters. We lost Katie when Katie became the global superstar, because the funds and the money that's involved in boxing at that level is simply eye-watering. So, yes, we've had discussions. We will continue to have those discussions. We will make every effort, as I'm sure will others, because they will want to mark that. Our job as a national broadcaster is to reflect national moments. The iconic moment that is delivered when Katie Taylor, when Croke Park, with 82,000 or 78,000 or whatever it turns out to be, given the limitations that are there, the iconic moment when Croke Park goes dark and the spotlight shines on Katie Taylor and she does her ring walk into the centre of Croke Park will be stunning. And RTE has an obligation to go after something like that.
That was Declan McBennett. Sounds like it could happen. Now, the discussions will obviously also be happening with the likes of Virgin Media as well. So terrestrial TV means terrestrial TV, doesn't mean necessarily mean RTE. Yeah. So they do have competition there. You do think that, like, a common complaint with RTE is that they are probably falling short of their mandate to serve the public with these events. So this is something that you would say, yeah, it most certainly is in the national interest for the national broadcaster to have this, and even just for the archives in future, for RTE to have this, to be able to, for future generations to look back in this.
For reeling in the ears.
For reeling in the ears. What song are we playing?
Whatever she
in the transition between the Troubles and Katie Taylor's fight. I don't know why the Troubles are being
they don't overlap at all.
They have to be in there. They have to be in there.
Yeah.
You have to pick a song from the year, though.
Yeah. What is the song? From the year. What is the song of the summer?
I don't know.
Man I Need, Olivia Dean.
Some Olivia Dean stuff, yeah.
It'll be Olivia Dean somehow. Yeah,
that's a good show. That's a good show.
The OD.
I don't know if she'd like to be called that. Definitely seems
I
to
hope
be,
she doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say there's a lot of appetite from all circles to make this happen, you know?
Yeah, me too.
Obviously asked.
Me too.
Yeah.
Wasn't the only thing that Mr. McBennett was saying, Enda?
No, he also spoke to Owen about the upcoming Nations League game between Ireland and Israel. And Owen asked him whether or not Ireland, or whether or not RTE are actually going to show this game, given the circumstances.
Yes, the Director General has made it clear that RTE have a legal and contractual obligation to broadcast those games if those games go ahead. And it now looks as if they're going ahead. And I think both venues are now known at this stage, certainly one of them.
What's your broadcast going to look like for that?
Truthfully, I don't know yet. We're busy getting through a World Cup and a GAA Championship. It's a conversation that has started within RTE, but the reality of it is we haven't got there yet. And it's a perfectly legitimate question, and it's a question that's been asked internally as well as externally. And the truth is, I don't know. We have been very careful to look at this. We have what are known in contracts as minimum broadcast obligations that we have to reach. In terms of any contract that you enter into with an organisation such as UEFA and FIFA. We will need to meet those minimum broadcast obligations. How we do that, in what form we do that, we will need to consider. And that's not a decision you make in 24 hours. We need to take that away. We need to sit down. We need to test it. We need to throw it up against the wall, and we need to see what comes back. And we need to be conscious of the views of our own staff. We need to be conscious of the views of the wider public, and we also need to be conscious of the fact that we have legal and contractual obligations which we must fulfil.
Yeah, so outside of the legal and contractual obligations that they have to fulfil, I do think they have a journalistic obligation to cover this match as well. These games shouldn't happen in the darkness, especially when they mean something politically. Like, I know a lot of people would have used the journalists going to Qatar while also writing stories about what's happening in Qatar and why the World Cup shouldn't happen there. Yeah. And the answer is always, well, we need to cover from a journalist's perspective. This is a historical moment and a political moment and an important one that we need to cover. So RTE also can't bury their heads in the sand here when this game is happening. Regardless of what you stand for politically, you have to, from a journalistic standpoint, cover these games as well.
Not to re-educate whether this game should or shouldn't be played, but how do you all envision this looking on the day? Do you think the match itself would just be like, dare I say, like a COVID game where there's just no one there and you can hear the players talk amongst themselves and shout and give directions, and then will there be protests outside the stadium, protests back here? How do you think the occasion will pass us by?
I think you probably hit the nail on the head about it feeling like a COVID game, because it's going to be in such a small stadium.
4,500 capacity.
Yeah, you're going to hear everything. Because
it's behind closed doors as well. So.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean about the COVID thing. Yeah, so you just hear people talk.
Exactly. I can envisage there being some form of protest over there, yeah. I think...
As in people to travel
over
there?
Yeah, I think people care deeply enough about this to go and make their voice heard to some degree. And then obviously, as you said, there'll be more stuff going on back home, I would imagine. That's the way I see it, but I could be way off it on that.
Yeah.
Serbia is an apt choice for this game because it's far more difficult to get to than the likes of Budapest, which most people assumed this game would be on, and so... Yeah.
Well, the Bracken, I think, was the...
All right, yeah, I'm going to hear plenty more about that in the next few weeks and months. I did mention the start of the show there, Ireland playing Australia in the first game of the series this Saturday. It's 10 past 11 Irish time that this starts. The team is named overnight or early this morning. Just briefly run through it here. So we have the fullback Keenan. The wingers are Balakoon and Osborne. Centres are McCluskey and Ringrose. And then the halfbacks are Gibson Park and Sam Prendergast. And in the forwards, you have Tom O'Toole, Dan Sheen, who's the captain, Tyke Furlong, James McCarthy, James Ryan, Kian Prendergast, his brother, Josh Van Der Feer, and Jack Cullen. There's no Caelan Darst, of course, no Jack Crowley, no Andrew Porter, no Tommy O'Brien. The replacements, you got Kelleher, Lachman, Clarkson, Byrne, Timoney, Casey, Frawley, and Bundy Aki. So 10 past 11 Saturday morning, Ireland face Australia. That's your team. We'll have Darst but nothing in studio later on. About an hour's time, actually, to talk about that and then to talk about his interview with Andrew Trimble. Now, Wimbledon was on last night, again, when the World Cup was occurring. Novak Djokovic, lads, easily dispensed out Stefanos Tsitsipas in straight sets. What has happened to Stefanos Tsitsipas? I don't know if you follow this guy's career at all. He's a two-time Grand Slam finalist. Mm. But 5 years ago, Tsitsipas was fairly hot. He was two sets to love up in the French Open final against Djokovic in 2021. He was one set away twice from being a Grand Slam champ, Keith. And now... the latest with Tsitsipas is once again he's divorced from his father, does not allow his dad to coach him. So himself and his dad were very tight, got too tight, have parted ways. It's a big thing in tennis, parent and a child. Andre Agassi's dad.
Yeah, I read his book.
Forced him to play tennis, didn't want to play tennis.
I remember when I read Agassi's book, he was, I think he lived in Nevada somewhere, and his father, they were going to buy a house, and the first thing his father did was march right out to the back and mark out a tennis court, and if it wasn't big enough for a tennis court out the back, they weren't interested in the house. That's how dialed in Agassi's father was. That's a brilliant book.
They used, I know everyone says it to me, everyone says it's unbelievable.
I had to mention that book to him yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I get it mentioned like once a week.
It's an incredible book. I can't believe you.
I know.
On the subject of the fathers as well, I was watching the Coco Gauff game.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday. She really struggled against Sierra. She was very, very close to losing that game a couple of times. And Coco Gauff she doesn't allow her father in the box anymore because it puts too much pressure on her.
But I think that's kind of a healthy relationship that they have.
What about Andy Murray and Judy Murray?
Yeah, well, that was tense, but I think Judy was involved in coaching other people in tennis, so there was kind of a separation. Like, Judy never coached Andy, and he had talked recently on Ramesh Ranganathan's podcast, all places. Andy Murray said the best thing about his mother was she never put pressure on him or Jamie. It was like, just play it if you want to. Enjoy it. And he had said himself that he wouldn't be a good coach of his own children because he'd expect too much.
Well, see, I would imagine it happens more often than not where a parent has been a successful sports person not putting pressure on their children as opposed to
the other
way around, where the children are the first generation to be successful.
You know, Serena Williams, obviously back in the news this week, that Richard Williams brought them to public tennis courts.
Yeah.
But that was to kind of make something of them. Like, he had no interest in tennis. He didn't know anything about tennis. He just got them to hit tennis balls. And then they moved to, I think, Florida to get trained. And they're actually saying this in the BBC commentary the other night. It's like at the age of 8 or 9, that everyone was saying, like, these two are going to be world number one. Like, and he didn't know that, obviously. He just tried to get them out of trouble.
Not break your heart, though.
What?
If you're young, when a young fella decided, I don't want me dad
it's
there because it's too much pressure.
Oh, yeah, that's why you brought it up. It's like, at what cost do you want to separate yourself from your parents?
Yeah.
You know? But he micromanaged him to within an inch of his life.
Mm.
And who the hell likes being micromanaged? And you're the least tolerant at being micromanaged by your own parent.
Well, we actually, that's true. We actually spoke about the Rafael Nadal documentary. You watched it while you were away as well.
It was incredible.
And like the discovery in it is he has this gene in his feet that he had carried an injury throughout his career. But it also says that this was most likely as a result of being pushed too hard at a young age. His uncle was his tennis trainer.
His uncle Tony.
And wouldn't let him...
His uncle Tony.
Uncle Tony.
Essentially just trained him trained him to death at a very young age.
The Nadals, like, sure, one of them played for Spain. Played at Euro 96 against England.
Oh, right.
You know, that's the family. So he's there, like Nadal, as in young Rafa's.
Is Rafa from Palma?
He's Mallorca, yeah.
Yeah, because I was in Palma there a couple of weeks ago, and the amount of museums, Rafael, Nadal museums, and tennis courts were everywhere, and I just put the two together.
He's right-handed, but Tony got him to play left-handed because it's an advantage.
Yeah.
But it's brutal.
I was right-footed. Growing up, my uncles, like my uncle David Cassidy and Mark Merrigan, just playing out in Ringsend were like, "Keep use your left foot. If I grow up to be 6 foot and you're left footed, you've got every commodity to go on to do what you need to do."
That's a great shout.
Another couple of examples.
There's the one of Dominic Szoboszlai as well. His father made him wear shoes that were too small for him. His feet wouldn't grow too much. So I think he's like, Szoboszlai's like 6 foot two, 6 foot three, but I think he's like size 7 feet or something. Size 8 feet, because, you know, there's obviously some, he obviously felt as though maybe it was something years ago.
Yeah.
Jeez, I used to wear 8.5 boots and I'm a size 9 and my feet are messed up because of it. Yeah. I love the real tight build.
Was it worth it?
It was worth it, yeah. You know, when you're changing direction, I didn't want my feet to be slipping and sliding anything. I wanted real tight.
Do you think you'd have had less of a career if you wore half a size above?
I wouldn't have been comfortable in my own head, Conor.
Oh, the way you said that to me in the show, and poignant. I feel, genuinely, for Tsitsipas, it's like he must think every day, like, Jesus Christ, like I should have won a Grand Slam. What age is he now? 27. Yeah, he still seems like a kid to me. Nick Kyrgios played as well doubles and had not a meltdown, but had a right cut off the umpire. They lost himself and Alexander Bublik, and he said he may never play Wimbledon again.
Does he play singles tennis at all? No.
No, he's, in fairness, he is cracked. He's had a number of surgeries. Like, I think he's had 5 surgeries in the last few years. But he's a part-time tennis player, and he always said he was a part-time tennis player, and he reached the Wimbledon final 4 years ago.
I remember that.
Now, it was the jammiest route you'll ever get to any final of anything.
Nadal pulled out or something, didn't he?
Nadal pulled out of the semi-final.
Yeah.
And the only player of renown at all that Kyrgios beat on the way to the final in Djokovic was the aforementioned Tsitsipas.
All right.
So look, it's kind of getting going a bit, Wimbledon, but it's competing.
Do you know what it is? It's lovely stuff for us on the breakfast show where we get home and there's a 6 o'clock game on, and you've had your lunch.
Is the World Cup now you're talking, or Wimbledon?
Wimbledon. So you've got the World Cup on at 6 o'clock now, or 5 o'clock with England last night. So you get to, maybe you don't have time to watch an episode or something. Maybe you just want to sit there, relax with a cup of tea, and just stick Wimbledon on, watch these games.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
But it's the ultimate time for everyone for a game during the week in this part of the world. Could we all come to a consensus? So everyone on X is complaining, why is the game on at this time? And everyone's mocking that person, saying, what time do you want it on?
6 o'clock is absolutely dead on for me.
Terrible for me. What about
I would, as a general consensus, as like a wider, what I think everyone would be delighted with.
No, I think it actually should be what suits you best to see what's the most common answer.
Oh, I so me would be like, a 7:45, it doesn't go to extra time, it's grand. That ends, I just go to bed then, that's sweet. But I think a time that there's never a game on is 6:30. I think 6:30 would be perfect. Everyone's home from work, really. And no one's kind of ready for bed. 7, maybe. Yeah, 7's not bad either, yeah.
7's dinner time for me.
Think about 7. I didn't get that far yet. I only got to 6:30.
Do you know what? So you're working away all the time in it?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy with quarter 8. I think the 15 minutes kills you, doesn't it? When it kicks off at 8 o'clock, it goes that little bit longer.
It would hurt during the season when it's like Champions League round of 16.
Yeah.
And 8 o'clock kickoff.
Yeah, no,
that's what gets me. Yeah.
Another couple of examples of the fathers' relationships that are weird.
Yeah.
Carlos Sainz, his father was a world rally championship driver. El Matador.
Yeah.
Fantastic driver as well. So that puts serious pressure on you if you're a driver. And then, I mean, daddy issues is Max Verstappen and Josh Verstappen. You know, a lot of pressure there.
Is it always dads?
Tiger Woods' mom.
Tanya Harding?
Judy Murray.
Tiger Woods' mom. Obviously, it was his dad that put pressure on, but his mom was also very, very strong-willed and strong-minded and walked every hole with him for the vast majority of his career.
Mm.
So she was always a massive presence.
I'm sure there's loads. Like, I can't think of any off the top of my head. I'm sure there's...
The big one, but Jelena Jokic, another tennis player you might have heard of out there, that was particularly brutal with her dad. Like, that was abuse. There's a documentary about it. It's a whole thing. Like, but I think the Julie Murray thing was kind of relatively...
Yeah, it was, you know?
I think there is that element of it. It does throw up the question of morality versus like the results. Like the results are very clear with the vast majority of this. That if you push your children to the extent that these guys did, they become become the greatest athletes of all time. Now, look, genetics are a big role in this. Finances are a big role in this as well. Obviously, most parents can't afford to just, you know, take the time off to...
The commonality that when it works is a parent will support you, but step back when necessary.
Yeah, exactly,
like the parents of Rory McIlroy, the parents of Roy Keane, etc.
Yeah.
Keith, great to have you.
Jeez, buddy, Keith Tracy there.
Yeah.
Keith is staying in here, by the way.
Keith, Thursday. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. How are we?
One quick one there before we get going.
I missed something there.
This is how we introduce Keith Thursday. Is that
okay,
Friday?
Sorry.
Your favorite. So just one. Just don't panic, Inda. Just one. Your favorite team at the World Cup to watch at Ireland, France. That was one sent in there to me yesterday.
I've enjoyed the Ivory Coast. I know they've been knocked out now. Argentina. Just a lot of it is the Messi factor. Morocco, I think, have been a really well-rounded team. Diaz is unbelievable. Hakimi, unbelievable. Yeah, Ivory Coast, Morocco, Argentina. I've enjoyed watching those three.
Have you had any cult heroes so far? Any like player you kind of came in, didn't know what about him, and now it's... Sorry, I realise you only...
No, go ahead. One.
The left-back of Ghana, is it Mensah? He was extremely aggressive.
He's smart as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he was so aggressive. I didn't know an awful lot about him, but he was really good against the English in particular. Really aggressive.
Yeah. Good. All right, plenty more where they came from later on. Keith Thursday, you're staying around, aren't you?
I'm stick about,
Can you bring Keith Tracy back in, if you don't mind?
Do we have to?
Yeah, he's just gone out. Then we'll bring him in there. All right.
Now I get it.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
I don't want to make excuses. We had three games in 14 days. That certainly takes it out of teams. Like, I heard Jack O'Connor talking about it yesterday, and that's Kerry and the depth of their squad.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.